Caught Offside with Andrew Gundling and JJ Devaney.
Megan Rapinoe sends it in low near post. It's flicked in front, and the US is on top. Lindsay Horan will get her second of this World Cup. Tobin Heath looking. Moy trying to get free shot, and a goal for Heath. Spectacular. US leads 2-0.
Oh, yes. Caught Offside from the Upper West Side of Manhattan. Andrew Gundling and JJ Devaney. What's up, brother?
Oh, take that, Sweden.
Revenge, a dish best served cold.
A quantum of solace.
2-0, the final. The U.S. women get their revenge, a measure of revenge over the Swedish women. They win the group, scoring 18 goals in the process.
Emphatic. There's nothing else you can say about it. They are going into the second round, where they will face Spain in rude health. There's no two ways about it. They've been able to rotate the squad, and they've been able to best the only real competition in that group. So, thumbs up. Well done.
100%. We're going to talk, of course, all about that game from earlier today. Some other things going on in the Women's World Cup that we have to get to. Of course, VAR. Just breathe. A mailbag, what to watch for, including Copa America, which we admittedly have not given a ton of time to so far, but I think we're getting to a point now.
I mean, there's some teams have only one game played.
You're right, but
I watched two games at the weekend, Andrew, and I wanted to hurt myself.
Well, here's the
rubbish
thing. The story of the tournament so far is a team that has played a couple games in Argentina, and I think a little bit needs to be talked about with what exactly is happening there.
And I really can't wait to talk about it because this is something that we're struggling to understand, but it's been this way for forever. Not forever.
Well, no. We'll get to that because yes. This is not new, unfortunately,
for them.
It's
a precipitous decline, though.
Yeah. We've got a little bit of Gold Cup, of course. The U.S. play this Saturday night against Trinidad and Tobago, another revenge match coming up. And that will lead us into a 5 stars for 5 years, which, by the way, continue to send them. I wasn't sure how long this was going to last.
No, we're going to do it. It's our fifth year all year.
This is going to be the entire year.
And I think next week or the week after, we have a little giveaway, nice little gift.
That's amazing.
You like the gift?
Well, the gift is great.
Yes.
What we have to give away to people. So, stay tuned for that. And your 5 stars for 5 years memory of the week, if you've got one that you haven't heard yet that you would like to hear, because we've gotten some real obscure ones, things that I barely mentioned happening. People remember more about this podcast than we do.
Sam Allardyce and Mushy Peas. When I describe scoring a goal in my adult nine-a-side league.
How are we going to find these?
I don't know.
You talk about a needle in a haystack.
One about your, frankly, grotesquely shaped body.
My WBS. Weird body syndrome. If you like them and you want one of your own to be played, just send us a review on Apple Podcasts or wherever you leave reviews these days. And we will find it and we will look for it and play it. Let's start, JJ, with, of course, as you heard at the top of the show from the voice of JP Della Camera, the U.S. women and Sweden. The U.S. do win this game 2-0. It was really the dream start for them, simply because if you allow Sweden to settle into the game, I don't know. We've been nitpicking throughout with the U.S. women because it just feels like it's human nature to try to find some flaw.
Sure.
So maybe if you allow Sweden to get into this game, in the back of these American players' minds that have had a hard time against the Swedish team, maybe doubt starts to creep in. Maybe Sweden gets one on the counterattack because they did look dangerous at certain moments throughout the game on the counter. But that early goal from the U.S., I'm not saying that it put the game to bed, but it had to put the Americans at ease.
Absolutely. And the intensity in general that the Americans played with. From early on, it was clear that the Swedes weren't going to bunker in like they did in the Olympics, where they were frankly cowards.
Wow. And you are fired.
Done.
That's the punishment for saying that.
Yeah, you say it, you call them cowards, contract's terminated.
No matter what you're doing, you're fired.
No. Clearly, they weren't going to bunker in, but at the same time, it was going to be a difficult, quite a physical game too. And the U.S. got off to such a great start, and that corner kick was just such an excellent routine to play it low to the near post, switch it up, because what have we seen from this team earlier on in the tournament has been aerial dominance. And when Ertz isn't there, she had a, what they're calling,
a hip contusion.
Which, what is that, a bruise?
A bruised hip.
Right, well, it was cautionary, and if she needed to, if it was knockout, she would have played. That's what we were told. But she wasn't there as a target. So Rapinoe goes low to the near post. Underrated part of that goal is the way Mewis steps across in front of the defender. I mean, that is a basic clear it away with the inside of your boot clearance, but when Mewis makes that run, it obscures defender's view. The ball goes right the way through. Horan taps home, and that is like a perfect start in the third minute. And after that...
Well, one thing before you move on from that, there is something I do want to say about that goal in particular. During the Thailand match, in the aftermath of the Thailand match, you saw the U.S. break out some kind of like nifty plays on set pieces.
Mm.
And there was kind of... There were some people wondering after that game, what are they doing wasting those against Thailand? Like,
yes.
A game that you're going to win with ease. I think we're starting to find out now that there's... They have a large catalog to choose from on these set pieces. The Swedish manager said before the game, I saw Graham Hayes tweet about it, that Sweden knew coming into this that the U.S. have what is appearing to be the, I think the terminology they used was the largest binder of set piece plays of anyone in this competition. Their ability to change things up, to keep their opponent on their toes on those set pieces, it's been huge so far. And I would imagine, like, I don't think now in seeing the way that they kind of vary things up, I don't think they've wasted things. I who knows how many more set-piece plays they still have left that they haven't used.
Well, that's true. Also, if it is in fact the case, and I don't know that it is, that Rapinoe mishit the corner, which we often seen... No, but we often seen happen. There's no way you can tell me that Mewis isn't intelligent enough to make that run and react. That's how good these players are.
I was working under the assumption that she meant to be going... near post.
I would imagine that's the case.
I trust her enough, and I choose to believe that.
I'm paying another compliment, Andrew, if you'd ever let me finish, based on that their reactions will be good enough. Now, what we learned from that midfield today was, in terms of passing, you lost nothing from not having Ertz there, because if you look at Lavelle, if you look at Mewis, their ability to switch the play, switch the field was brilliant. And Horan as well. What do I say? Horan or Horan?
How about pronouncing it the way that she does?
Well, I haven't heard her say it.
Well, every broadcaster says Horan.
Horan.
I know you die a little inside every time you say that, but I'm sorry. It's how it is.
Yeah.
Devaney.
Steady. Horan, you know, her ability to switch to play those diagonals, they really stretched Sweden, which was great to see on either flank. Tobin Heath had so many touches, so many times she was isolating their full back, trying to get past. That caused huge consternation. Same on the other side, Megan Rapinoe. Like, the US were pretty dominant. Now, Alyssa Neuer had something to do for the first time in forever,
yeah.
But still, at the same time, it was really comfortable for the US.
Yeah, Neuer made two saves in this one.
Yeah.
Also kind of like...
Well, one was straight at her.
Yeah.
And the other one was a cross towards the end when Jakobsen finally got the better of Crystal Dunn and put a cross in. But the positives were that midfield didn't miss a beat. I thought that Rapinoe and Heath were sharp, although I think it was in the first half where Rapinoe kind of gesticulated towards Lavelle that she wanted the ball moved quicker. Remember that shot she had into the side netting?
Mm-hmm.
And probably if I had to have a criticism, that would be the only thing, that they at times both Heath and Rapinoe didn't deliver just that little bit quicker.
Now, would you say, I think the thing that we've been wondering through Thailand, through Chile, you know, what are we allowed to take from this? It's been hard to know because the level of those teams in terms of competition is... You know, it's subpar. This is a game, though, where like we're allowed to now finally start coming to some conclusions about this U.S. team.
Well, to a point, because Peter Gerhardsen rested Nila Fischer, Lena Hurtig. You know, so as good as that Sweden team was, that was not their starting 11. Their what you could put down as their best starting 11, but that's neither here nor there. They're quite talented. We had questions going into this game, and I want to address... There was a few people who tweeted at me when I said Crystal Dunn has answered any defensive questions I had about her. I thought she'd been perfect, and that was at half time.
Mm-hmm.
And I do believe she had been. 1v1, they had isolated and gone at her. That is going to happen against France, we would expect, should we navigate through Spain. People are going to attack her because guess what, Andrew? She's not a natural fullback. She's not a natural defender. But 1v1, she was superb. And the only time that she really looked uncomfortable was there was one ball went in behind. That was the Neuer where Elissa Neuer punched the ball away. I keep calling her Neuer, which is high praise.
Yeah.
When Jakobsen went 1v1 and finally had the beating of her, she occasionally got a little bit too narrow. Her spacing wasn't 100%. But again, she's a fullback. So that's what I take from it. The flanks were tested. And what was interesting in the second half, when Carly Lloyd came into the game, they decided they would, I suppose, switch emphasis a bit because Dunn had the beating. Even if Dunn was beaten to the ball, she has such recovery pace. She's almost like DeAndre Yedlin in that sense. Great recovery pace and a brilliant tackler that she could cope with things. So they started to switch to the other side and target Kelly O'Hara. What was interesting was when Kelly O'Hara was under pressure on that left-hand side, Carly Lloyd was tracking back to fill in and double up. That was definitely an instruction that Carly Lloyd got going onto the field. And it's Jill Ellis thinking all the time, thinking, okay, we will get away with this tonight, but we need to have either midfielders or forwards filling in on those fullback positions. That was the litmus test for me tonight, Andrew. Everything else, it was really comfortable. And if I'm looking to pick, I suppose, weaknesses, we should have had another couple of goals.
Yeah, I guess there's something to that. Maybe finishing has been something that's reared its head a little bit in these last two games.
And across so the warm-ups as well.
Yeah, more so against Chile, I guess you would have to say, but some of that was the goalkeeping that they ran into. I don't know how much I blame the U.S. for that. But yeah, maybe you would have liked to have seen a couple more goals in each of those games, but ultimately that's kind of nitpicking. I'm glad you bring up the defense, Carly Lloyd getting back, because that is something that they do emphasize, team defense.
Well, they have to.
And you're seeing it.
Yeah.
And you're absolutely seeing it.
And especially when Ertz isn't there. We talk about a sitting fullback who can screen in behind the fullbacks and almost become another central defender when they don't have the ball or when the fullbacks are pulled out of position. Ertz wasn't there and that didn't happen. So when people talk about, someone tweeted at me that Crystal Dunn had a horrible first half. It was unbelievable. Unbelievable.
This game, I've always said this game is weird like that. More than any other sport, people can watch the same thing and come to complete opposite conclusions.
Yeah, well, whatever. But I'm right. But the point being, I suppose I've lost my train of thought there. Stupid of me. But like some people were focusing on that. Don't just focus on her defending. Mm-hmm. Like it was difficult for her because Jakobsen was in acres of space, and that's because on her side she had Mewis and Rapinoe. They are offensively minded. They are not defensively minded. And so when Ertz isn't there, the safety blanket is gone. But again, minor quibbles.
Carly Lloyd, the night was both good and bad for her. The good, she becomes the third most capped player in U.S. women's history, passing Mia Hamm, 277 caps. The bad, her World Cup goal streak ends at 6.
Yeah, so, I mean.
Well.
Okay.
I'm just telling you that happened tonight.
Yeah.
She could have scored. She had a chance late. But a good save.
Bad for me is the potential knocks that we've picked up in this game.
Yeah, I mean, look, you mentioned Ertz not playing for the hip contusion, but I don't think there's
much
to worry about.
Morgan at halftime?
Alex Morgan coming off at halftime after she got kind of battered a little bit in the first half. And then I don't think I was worried about it. They said that it was precautionary.
Yeah.
I don't know what you read into this, if anything at all, but she didn't speak to reporters in the mix zone afterwards. I don't know if that's a reason to raise an eyebrow that, you know, she was upset about something. Maybe that's reading into it too much.
Tobin Heath got a kick, or she was stood on towards the end, but she got up, hobbled off. Kelly O'Hara, we don't know about. I haven't been able to find any update there, but she looked to be struggling towards the end.
I enjoy watching Tobin Heath play so very much.
I was
another nutmeg tonight. And I was a little bit disappointed that they took the goal away from her and
for the slightest of
made
deflections.
It an own goal. I mean, I've seen deflections more egregious than that.
There's some nonsense going on at this World Cup in certain areas, and we'll get to it later, including VAR and referees. But Heath, Andrew, it flicked up off the Swedish defender's boot. It was not a massive deflection.
Yeah,
it was so strange.
Isn't the rule typically for that if the ball looks like it's not going to be on target,
but the
deflection brings it back on target, that's ruled an own goal, or am I making that up right
now? There's the dubious goals committee, which sits in a darkened room in the Tower of London for the Premier League, and they come up with their rulings on it. I don't know what the usually,
like, if it's close, just give it to the player.
What we used to do in the schoolyard is if it changes direction massively and goes in from where you were kicking it to, then it's an own goal. Or if you actually do what Renard did for France and tap it home in the second game for France, where she just side footed it home, then that's obviously an own goal. This is not an own goal for me. Do you know who Tobin Heath reminds me of? Because she's leggy and she has that languid style, but she's full of skill.
Can I get a hint?
He used to do commentary for ESPN and he had curly hair. Ex Liverpool winger.
Macca?
Yeah. Oh. She reminds me of his style. And also a little bit of Glenn Hoddle.
Mm, wow. Yeah. You know, I could see that a little
bit.
Do
you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Leggy, skillful kind of wing play.
Her goal, should that have been allowed to stand? Because I'm going to, this will be another one where I kind of throw my hands up and just plead ignorance here, because I don't know.
How can you judge Carly Lloyd to not be active there?
See that
interfering
right,
with play.
That's what I would think. When I saw it and I saw the replay, I thought, "Oh, that's coming back." But you know what? There is such vagueness in terms of whether or not a player is deemed to be involved and interacting with the play. So, I guess this would be a situation where I'm okay with the goal standing, because I suppose it's one of those what they rule on the field should be allowed to stand. The only reason that I thought it was coming back is that Swedish defender who winds up knocking the ball away there to Tobin Heath.
She's not making that play if she's not there.
If Carly Lloyd's not making the run.
She could nearly take a touch and whack it, or she could turn her body full on it and get on it. But Carly Lloyd's run distracts, dictates, panics, puts pressure on. Look, I always go back to Wayne Rooney against Preston in the FA Cup, where Wayne Rooney is standing in an offside position, goes to make a body move, puts the goalkeeper off and goes into the net. How can you not say he's interfering? How can you not say that?
There's just a lot of vagary with that
rule.
But
do you know what? Just for the purposes of this podcast, because we are going to talk VAR in a little bit, let's just say that's it. It's a goal. Move on with our lives. Because ultimately, it's a game at the end of the group. The US win. We move on. Because what I'm finding really hard with this is it's every single game and it's getting so tedious. So very tedious. And I'm not sure that the 17 days of training that the referees got coming into this tournament was sufficient.
We will talk about that. I gotta say, I'm nervous to have that discussion with you.
Well,
because
I
know you and I... and.
No, I'm actually going to let you have the floor. People know about...
Are you really?
I am. People,
because I have a lot to say and I was afraid that you were just going to start jumping me.
People have heard from me already. They know about my almost, people want to call it existential, moral, ethereal view of this. This my spiritual
here
view.
Is. JJ is smarter than all
no,
of us.
No, but the rhythms of the game should not be interfered with for these decisions that are on the molecular level, that are so, so tiny. But we'll get to that.
Well, I mean, we're almost there.
But we should round off our Sweden discussion.
Ultimately, for me, my biggest takeaway with the U.S. women after the group stage is, it's a couple things. Number one is depth, specifically in the Chile match, but I guess it could carry over to this one as well. Like I said a few days ago, there just doesn't seem to be a drop-off. Like you talked about, you know, Carly Lloyd coming on for Alex Morgan. There's just like, it just continues to roll.
Look at the way they reconfigured that midfield. And you see these, I think it was Mewis and Horan played two crossfield passes that were just sumptuous, driven balls. And you're like, they've lost nothing here. If anything, they've gained on the creative side.
Yeah. So that for me is takeaway number one. Takeaway number two is it's one thing to be a really great team. It's another thing to be a really great team that is playing really great. And by that I mean, you know, we've seen great teams, you know, Brazil at the last World Cup. They kind of, like, they barely got past Costa Rica. They didn't get past Belgium. Like, you can be a great team that just doesn't have it. This team right now, I know you can question what Thailand and Chile are, but you can only do what you do against these teams that you're playing, and they scored 13 goals against Thailand. Like, that's not just a normal performance against a bad team. Every player right now for the U.S. appears to be in top form. There's no weak link.
They're not skating by in the way that their main opposition are, France. like France are playing within themselves, or they're just playing badly, one or the other. Whereas the US, I think the intensity levels, the energy levels, it's really good. It's very, very heartening.
Oh, yeah. Like, there can't really be another team out there that you feel better about going into the knockout stages than somebody would feel about this American team right now. They seem united with one another. I sometimes wonder if Hope Solo's comments about Jill Ellis before the tournament
were galvanizing.
Maybe. Now, I don't know necessarily. Who knows? There might be players in the locker room that agree with what Hope Solo said, but aren't in a position where they can say it. Or maybe they heard it and they all rolled their eyes at it and thought, you know, we're going to rally behind our manager. I don't know.
I do think this is a team that is fueled by outside noise. They're motivated themselves, obviously, but I do think that they are capable of drawing on that. Maybe.
Well, we know they hear it. We didn't talk about it a few days ago, and I was proud of us because I'm so tired of
the celebration conversation.
Yeah, but you know, they hear it when Carly Lloyd did the fake golf clap celebration after her first goal.
Oh, yeah, and they kept doing it. They did it for all three of the Chile goals to the point where Rory Smith commented on Twitter, will they get bored of this celebration?
yeah, this team has been really a pleasure to watch. And you hope that continues. We'll talk about the road that lays ahead for them in just a moment. We're going to get into some other elements of the Women's World Cup. Let's get into that stuff right now. We hinted at it a few minutes ago, but VAR has taken center stage in the wake, really, of Scotland's 3-3 draw with Argentina. Now, it's happened at other points in this tournament, but I think that was the most high-profile moment just because of
the nature of the way the game was panning out. Scotland led 3-0 going into the last 15 minutes and then, of their own volition, imploded. But the nail in the coffin was the retaken penalty.
And it was just so cruel. Look, you said you'd give me the floor. I'm going to ask for it because I have some thoughts on this that may actually surprise you, in that I have been staunchly in favor of this technology from the day that it was introduced, really from before it was ever introduced, when it was just an idea. However, I am not stupid. I'm not, you know, I can be stubborn, but I'm also not bullheaded. I won't allow facts essentially to get in the way of what I believe. What is happening here is not good. I think anyone can see that. Like, this is not, I don't think this is what the rule, what VAR was invented for. That has become increasingly obvious to me. However, it does not mean that you throw the baby away with the bathwater. I want to read a DM that we got on Twitter from a listener, good listener to the show, Gaius, I guess is how you say it. He wrote the following. He said, JJ, you were right about VAR. For the longest time, I defended it and thought it was right for the game. Every time I heard you and Andrew get into it over VAR, I wanted to pull my hair out at how irrational JJ was sounding. However, now I've come full circle. VAR's initial implementation in the Bundesliga, Serie A, and the Men's World Cup seemed promising, yet it seems to have been all downhill from there. Why do you think referees are being instructed to over-litigate everything? I still believe some sort of video review can improve the game we love, but it's clear to me at this point, VAR is not the way in its current format. Hashtag VAR out. Now, to me, that is madness. I don't think that we can quite just yet forget all of the good that VAR has done. It's very easy to over-magnify these situations and these moments, the bad from VAR. But it's done a lot of good as well. Hell, look at the way Tottenham benefited from it. Like I've always said, for offside, it's brilliant. I think it works great. I don't think it's been overbearing in that way. But to me, to just get rid of it altogether is irrational behavior. It's not an all-or-nothing system. VAR can be really whatever you want it to be. For example, this is from the BBC. The Premier League will not use video assistant referees in the 2019-20 season to rule on goalkeepers moving off their line to save a penalty. Professional game match officials limited, PGMOL, will leave such decisions to an on-field official. Perfect! We're in the guinea pig phase of this technology. It's unfortunate that that's happening during a major tournament. No one wants to see that happen. But that's kind of the way it is, and you can't get overly emotional about some of these situations to then do away with an entire technology that overall has helped the game. So I'm fine. Pick and choose. It works well with offside decisions. It works well with fouls in the box. It struggles with handballs in the box, keepers moving off the line. Pick and choose. Mold this technology into what people prefer it to be, just like the NFL. Not everything is challengeable in the NFL. Holding is not a challenge. Fumble is. It works well. So make VAR into that here. If you think it's not working for this situation, then don't use it. Follow the Premier League's lead. So that is where I stand on this right now. You're right. I would be a fool to continue to just blanketly yell, VAR is great. VAR is great. It's perfect. We have to use it. Don't touch it. No, we're seeing now there are some situations where it's wrong, where it's not working. But there are situations where it works well. Pick and choose.
It's also worth noting in this game and in the context of this game and the cruel nature of the way things went. First of all, there are a couple of truths that are always very, very clear about being Scottish.
Doesn't it make you proud to be Scottish?
It's being Scottish!
That's the first one. And being Scottish at a major tournament, they will find ways. Ask Craig Burley, he was involved. They will find ways to not get out of the group. They were 3-0 up. The second point is, in general, the referee, forget VAR for a second, prior to this, was out of control. Here's Pat Nevin of the BBC talking about what he saw for the very first time in a career that's in football, that's must be close to 40 years now.
If you want a good laugh tonight, have a look at the refereeing in the game we've just watched. Honestly, top quality comedy. You've never seen anything like it. I've never seen in a game in my life before. Scotland made a substitution. The substitute hadn't got over the halfway line to come on. She said, carry on, take the corner. The opposition took the corner. She hadn't got on the pitch yet. I've never seen anything like it. She stopped the game. 4 minutes extra time. There was a penalty in the midst of that. 4 minutes to make that penalty happen. And then she blew up. What happened to the 4 minutes extra time? What are you doing?
Ridiculous stuff, like from time management to the basics of football. Like, it's so funny, there's people have grabbed it on Twitter, the substitution, the girl hasn't put her foot barely across the white line.
Insane.
And the corner kick or free kick is happening. Come on, that is just basic stuff. Mm-hmm. I feel bad for the Scots. I think they're actually a really nice little team, and
it's a horrifying way to be eliminated from a World Cup.
The other side to it is Argentina is one of these countries that has battled and battled and battled to have the female game recognised in their country and to get where they're at. They were crying during the national anthem. Some of them, they were so emotional. So, kind of for the neutral, it's a win win. If Scotland had won, great. If Argentina got one, which they did, tied, which they did, it was great.
But you don't want to see Scotland or anyone lose like that.
No, I don't. I don't. But again, I think the referee in general was incompetent in this game, never mind the application of VAR. Also, this rule is a new rule that's just been introduced. Why did it have to be in this tournament?
I just wish that sometimes, like, we've taken this technology and turned VAR into a curse word. And I just wish that, like, common sense in some situations could be applied. Like,
I get your point.
That term clear and obvious just keeps ringing through my head. They're just not utilizing those words. Like, they've gone, like you keep saying, and you're right too, they've gone right to the molecular level. And I don't think that's what VAR's intention truly was. Somebody who's my instructing these officials is telling them that's how to do it.
My view is for the IFAB, who rule over this, to convene, you know, a conference and get a hold on the offside rule. Let's get that back to what it needs to be. Let's get it back to the spirit of what the rule was for originally, which is we don't want people goal hanging. Not is his left bicep in an or whatever or is a part of his nose with which he can score in. Like, we have to get back to, we have to clearly define the rules before we can put VAR in again.
Well, unfortunately,
I would remove VAR completely.
I know.
And start again.
Unfortunately, with what you just said about offside, that is not a thing that VAR did. We, as the general public, did that
first. Yes.
I mean, how many, well before VAR was even a seedling in someone's head.
Look at handball. We've just, a rule has come in on June 1st that is going to, wow, wait until this domestic seasons get going with this thing. It's going to be something.
Yeah.
But anyway, we will get to that.
But the offside thing, you're right. Like, ultimately, it exists, so there's no cherry picking in the game. But, like, years ago, once instant replay was invented as a thing, you could then see it. You know, commentators would say, oh, he's got his, you know, his front leg is a touch offside. That goal shouldn't count.
But the daylight rule was pretty good, Andrew, where you say there has to be clear between. So if I'm stretching in front of you, but my legs are, you know, right now, if my chest is in front of you as I'm sprinting, if I sprint like Raheem Sterling, you know what I mean?
Right.
Like,
with the little
like a proud peacock,
like a proud peacock. I'm offside most of the time.
Oh God. Anyway, come on. Let's move on. Let's have a look at this bracket.
So the group stage is concluded. The bracket is out. And in the end, the U.S. are left in exactly the situation that we thought. They're in a really difficult side of the bracket. Here is Kate Margraf talking on ESPNFC about the best teams in the world and how she thinks the bracket will shake out for them.
I don't see any upsets. I don't. I think Germany is getting stronger. England's getting stronger, as well as France. And that's what you want to see from the top teams. And that's the reason why they win it, is they get a little bit of that momentum. They need to avoid injuries to some of their key players. They need their goalkeepers to continue to have strong performances. But if they're able to do that, I do not foresee any upset, as Norway and Australia, they're just going to battle it out. England should easily beat Cameroon. France will beat Brazil. It's a side that's decimated, not very deep, a little bit tired, and one of the oldest teams in the tournament. And the United States is going to have to handle Spain, who will have more possession of the ball, but don't have that ruthless instinct. So they should be able to capitalize, because we're more efficient than they are.
The star power on the American side of the bracket between, you know, three of the world's top four teams are there, the U.S. and France, one and two, and then England. But then even beyond that, you have Norway, who obviously have a great history in this tournament. You have Australia with Sam Kerr, who might be the best player in this tournament. You know, Marta with Brazil. I mean, that side of the bracket is unbelievable.
There might be a collision course coming in the semifinal between... It might be between... The U.S. might play... They might play England in this kind of... What would that be like? That would be stunning. Anyone who's watched Phil Neville's team, he has improved this team far beyond what they were under Sampson at the last tournament. Like, they are a much better team. And the way they play is actually really attractive. And the US are the best in the world. That could be an absolutely... And I hate writing off all the other teams in this, because like you said, everybody's bringing something to the table.
Yeah.
Oh, man.
And looking at the other half of the bracket, I guess the...
I that's a little more difficult for me, because... I'm expecting, based on what I saw today, I thought Canada were very good against the Netherlands today. I think they can beat Sweden. I think Japan and the Netherlands is much closer to call than people think, and I think the Netherlands will just about shade that. And Italy and China, I can't call that one, because Italy have kind of been spoilers in this tournament. No one's expected them to do what they've done, and maybe they are going to be the dark horse. The Croatia in 98, they're going to keep going. I don't know.
The other matchup over there is Germany and Nigeria, which is a fairly one-sided matchup. But for Nigeria to get to this point in the tournament is an incredible achievement for them. And the way that they got there, Chile needed to beat Thailand by three goals today. They're lining up a penalty late on. Here is what it sounded like. This would have sent Chile through.
Chile needs one more goal.
Still searching, never to find.
The crossbar.
And there's video, I think it was on Grant Wall's Twitter feed, I saw it, of the Nigerians reacting. And it's for the devastation of Chile, it is, there's always another side. And in this case, it's Nigeria. And it was cool to see them celebrating the way that they did, because, man, that's a great achievement for them to get through the knockout stage. But they do have Germany, and that is going to be a difficult path for them to get through. But the group stage was fun. If you can take out all of the VAR intervention that we did have, there was a lot of drama. The U.S. looked great, which is obviously what we're most interested in right now. And so there you have it. The knockout stage begins this weekend, and we'll be all over it. The U.S. Well, I have in What to Watch For. We'll get to some of that. But
U.S. are out on Monday.
Yep. It should be noted too: the 18 goals that the U.S. scored in the group stage is the most ever by a women's team in the group stage of the World Cup. So props to them, beating Norway 17 from 1995. So there you go. We'll take a very quick break. When we come back, we've got a big mailbag. We got a What to Watch For. We're going to talk a little bit about Argentina in the Copa America. We've got 5 stars for 5 years. Don't go anywhere. Back now on Caught Offside Mailbag. What do you got?
Mel Beasy, cutoffsidepod@gmail.com, @CUSSoccerPod on Twitter. Please come and follow us. We should be at 10,000 followers by now. It's ridiculous considering all the listeners we have. And cutoffside ESPN on the gram of Instas.
We got in a lot of trouble the other day.
Oh, no, we did.
You're a bad boy.
Music
and
was
you need to be punished.
Copyrighted music was taken down. And don't say it like that. You make
you're
it sound
a naughty
weird.
Boy.
No, don't say it like that. People get the wrong idea. All right? Mike Messina has a great question that you would ask across a pint in a pub with your friends, but it requires its own intro music.
Yeah, money!
And Milner scores. And Milner makes them cheer.
I might stretch myself up to some Ribena or something.
Makes them cheer.
A bit of squeeze against the side of the cup.
Makes them cheer.
Oh, yes. Ribena aficionado. Tea drinker extraordinaire, James Milner. This is a good question. Two league titles, Champions League winner, 522 appearances and a handful of cups. Will James Milner be considered a Premier League all-time great?
Oh, man.
That's tricky.
So you're saying, like, if there was a Premier League Hall of Fame,
yeah,
would he be in it?
Is he? He's not a first ballot Hall of Famer.
No.
He can't be. Like, his time at City was bench, coming on, making contributions, but...
I'm trying to think, who is like, his comparable in, like, the NBA? Like, a glue guy? Is he like Andre Iguodala?
A glue guy? Oh, I'm
not qualified
to answer that.
What Iguodala is for the Warriors, or maybe like Draymond Green?
What about...
Like, I don't
let's
know
go
that,
football.
Like, Draymond Green is a truly great player. Huge part of what the Warriors did, but like when it's all said and done, will he be a Hall of Famer? I don't know. I kind of like that comparison.
He's going to be a cult hero at Liverpool. He will go down as a Liverpool legend. That is for sure. Especially considering the view me and other supporters had of him when he joined the club and what Klopp has created him and turned him into.
Yeah, you had a major eye roll with that signing.
Oh yeah, but think of what he was: bench player at Man City, fast approaching 30. Mm-hmm. It didn't look great, but look at it. It's been brilliant. For me, he's a Liverpool, he's a club legend. He's a club legend at Leeds United too. They want him back to finish his career.
So what is your ultimate answer to the question?
No.
Okay.
Would be it. Because his City period was not, he was not influential enough.
Yeah. If there was a Hall of Fame, I don't think he's getting in.
Hmm.
I don't think.
Is he a bit like the Mets catcher that made the Hall of Fame there? Oh, why am I blanking?
Mike Piazza?
Piazza was like...
Piazza is a stone cold legend.
Right, because he has the most home runs for a catcher,
He was just like the greatest hitting, maybe the greatest hitting catcher of all time.
Okay, all right, okay. You see, you can't say that about Milner.
No.
Milner's in the John O'Shea mold, I think, a little bit.
I think he's... Well...
You can't say he's better than... John O'Shea has played in more European Cup finals. Or has he?
I don't know.
They might have played in the same amount.
Yeah, I don't know.
Actually, you're right. Yeah, I don't know. That's a tricky one.
Yeah. All right.
Two sorry emails, one of which is from CC Brooksy, who contacted us on the DMs. He slid in there on the Instagram. Mm-hmm. I just listened to the podcast and was interested in the talk about Lampard. As a Chelsea fan, I believe the reason Sarri was not liked was for his play and the fact that he never really said the right thing to the media, which is interesting. I would have to think Lampard will do better with the English media. Do you think Sarri's trouble with the media did hurt him as much as it seems sometimes? Now, we flagged this early.
We made fun of it.
And I read a piece by John Nicholson on Football 365, which takes aim at the tabloid media, the way they spun who Sarri was and the way that may have been reflected back to Sarri through the Chelsea support. So he talks about Pep Guardiola's eccentricities and then he speaks about Sarri's. But eccentricities are only positives if the results and quality of football are good. If things go badly, the exact same habits will be portrayed as losing it or being desperate or odd. This is how Sarri has been portrayed for months and has now become a point of view which is unshakable, despite the fact they had a really good season.
That's why he has been said to be floundering, even whilst making two cup finals and finishing third behind two wonderful teams. I guarantee that if Frank Lampard matches those achievements, he will never be said to be floundering at any point.
Well, I said that literally, almost word for word on the last podcast.
I think that's a good analysis of, because the tabloids have gone after him. And
he was made into a punchline, and the Ariza Balaga moment was kind of the cherry on top. There was almost no coming back from that.
And it'd be foolish to think that hasn't had an impact on Chelsea fans and the way they look at
him. 100%. And it's not the right reason to fire a manager, that he doesn't have a good relationship with the media.
Next email, it's a tweet from Trip Peters. Now, he was responding to our conversation as well, and he sent a flurry of tweets, which were really... No, and I'm not slagging you off, Trip. I think that some of your points were really good. He pointed out, you know, style of play, Chelsea fans didn't warm to it. Okay, I'm not sure I buy that 100%, considering you had Mourinho's second series, which was just rubbish. They were so hard to watch for long periods, second time round, and they still won a championship. Winning is a huge, huge... a cure for style of play issues. I'm also not 100%. You made the point that Antonio Conte came in and he made do with what he had. You know, not really true. He came in and he did great things with Victor Moses. He also bought the best midfielder in the league, possibly in the world at the time, in N'Golo Conte, and went on to win the league. So, that, you know, things like that. But he did make a lot of good points. This one, I wasn't having at all.
All right.
Purchasing of expensive players instead of using talented hometown players. Neglect of Abraham, Callum Hudson-Odoi and Ruben Loftus-Cheek. Chelsea fans want so badly to see their youth succeed and grow like Lampard, Terry, wait for it, and Morris.
Oi
is right.
That's what Chelsea fans want?
That's what Chelsea fans want.
Let's see how that goes when they...
First of all, Trip. Yeah, go on.
I was going to say, then you'll love this summer.
Oh, you're going to love it, Trip, because you're going to see all these guys. By the way, Lampard is the poster boy for the beginning of the Abramovich generation, where he was bald.
Yeah, I was going to say, he's not a Chelsea youth team
John
player.
Terry is the only one there that you can say came through the ranks and was a success. Jody Morris, God love him, was like the most bit part of bit part players for about 6 years before he was shipped off to Leeds, where he never played and ended up at Millwall. Come on, man. You can't sell me that. This whole era of Chelsea, Trip, is based on buying, right? So when Sarri comes in, he doesn't get extended to him what every other manager had, which was to splurge in the transfer market. Now, if you want to say Higuain was a bad move, I'm fine with that. But he has every right to make that. And there's no guarantees promoting Callum Hudson-Odoi or Ruben Loftus-Cheek and giving them regular time is going to make a difference. You finish third, you won a Europa League. That's all I'm saying. Jody Mar. Was Damien Duff a product of that? What about Arjen Robben? Come on, man. Chris Lorenzo wants to talk about Argentina. We're going to get to that. Jacob McKenzie. Would you consider Bernardo Silva a candidate for the Ballon d'Or if he keeps up his form into next season? Crucial cog in City's treble or a quadruple, depending on your view. Not a quadruple. What are you talking about? And a Nations League winner.
Is that a Community Shield reference?
Yeah. What's he talking about?
I don't know about that.
New. And a Nations League winner plus MVP. Nations League. It's still an achievement.
Would I consider him?
Of course.
I guess, yeah, but right now in my mind, it's kind of a situation where, and look, the Ballon d'Or is really far off, so it's hard to judge it now. But if we had like a mid-season one, right now everybody's kind of playing for second. Messi was just so sensational this past season for Barcelona, so it'd be hard for me to just not hand it to him.
Yeah. Also, he didn't win in his country in the key categories. He wasn't Football Writers Player of the Year. He wasn't, you know, he just didn't win those ones. I'm presuming he would have needed to do that. Van Dijk is probably ahead of him in the European voting, if we're being honest.
Yeah.
Rightly or wrongly. Kyle Young. Firstly, I'm primarily writing to second the request for archived Caught Offside episodes. My personal interest will be to revisit the 2014 World Cup and the 2016 European Cup tournaments, European Championship. I found CEO Soccer Pod in the lead up to the 18 World Cup. Loved those preview episodes, and yes, I subscribed directly. Good man. I would love to be able to revisit other big football moments I was not already following you for. My thinking out loud suggestion here is that this would be
ideal direct subscription exclusive material type stuff if iTunes would support it. Just a thought. So we dig it up and put it.
I don't know how to do that.
But
though,
if we dig up our old episodes and put them on our cut-off site feed. I mean, it's possible. I don't know. Keep sending in your 5 stars for 5 years and we'll do our best to dig up the parts you really want. Additionally, and this may sound like a slightly absurd request, but what would it take to get a shout out to Murph, the dude, and the rest of the Sounderland Till I Die crew out in Seattle? Murph and I discuss new Caught Offside episodes often. You're one of our favourite topics and we advocate endlessly for the pod. How nice is that?
Shout out.
Shout out.
By the way, not a great day for that crew because I saw that Will Bruin tore his ACL and he's done for the season.
Oh, God.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, he's part of the ACL club, which is literally the worst club in football.
Yeah.
That was the mailbag and I thought that was a lovely ending to it. People advocating for us.
I'm sorry that I put a dark cloud on it, but if we're going to mention the Sounders, that's the news of the day.
Sounderland till I die.
Yeah, the news on it, they say he does have an ACL tear of his right knee. That's the official diagnosis. That's what Schmetzer said afterwards. The surgery will come after they let the swelling go down, and he'll have surgery in early July. He's effectively done for some time. He's 29 years old, has 2 goals and an assist this season in 4 starts.
Well, you've urinated all over Murph and the dude's chips right there.
Torn ACL, guys. I'm sorry.
Sorry, Kyle.
Let's see what to watch for, JJ. Copa America, Friday, 7 o'clock p.m., Ecuador and Chile. I'm starting to wonder, with Alexis Sanchez's downturn in terms of his club form, is he now, can we now induct him into the country over club group?
Based on that game against Japan.
Yeah, he scored a goal.
Nope. Not yet. Although,
I mean, but he does, like, he's so great for Chile. Like, just think of everything
he wanted
that
to be.
Won.
He sacrificed a lot of his club career with this endless cycle of tournaments. 3 of the last 4 years, there's been a Copa America. It's one. Yeah, and there'll be one next year when they move to the 2020 format. They're going every 4 years. But it's going to be from an even number, the maniacs.
Sunday, 3 o'clock, Colombia and Paraguay. I think, I mean, it's very early in this tournament, but Colombia's early performances, I think you would have to say they look like the best team so far. Brazil is 1 win, 1 draw.
Right, but what about Uruguay? I know that they've only played once, but...
Well,
I would add them into it. I can't wait for the Colombian hate I'm going to get for this, but you know me. I am a Colombian skeptic when it comes to this team. I believe they can be good, but they always let me down. They barely beat Qatar, and the 2 goals they got against Argentina were nice moves. The Roger Martinez goal in particular was an absolute belter, but that game was rank bad. The two teams, Argentina and Colombia, looked terrible. Brazil are making them look good with that draw against Venezuela, even though they had 3 goals chalked off, which was quite something.
I should tell you, while you're saying this about Uruguay, they're playing Japan as we speak.
Yeah.
It's 2-2. Jose Jimenez just scored literally seconds ago in the 66th minute to equalize after Suarez had a penalty in the 32nd.
It really doesn't matter who it is for Japan. They are going to spoil the party with their excellent play.
Koji Miyoshi with both goals for the Japanese at this point.
Good for them.
Yeah. I saw a story. Somebody tweeted a story earlier today of Radamel Falcao recounting a time that he played against Uruguay and Jose Jimenez's debut. Did you see the story?
Yeah, and Jimenez was just...
It was like the most genius form of trash talk that I've ever seen.
But it wasn't. It was distract talk. He was like, I'm buying a new car. What color do you think I should get it in? One was about, I'm going to get a... This is my debut. I'm going to get a tattoo. But how easily put off is... Is Falcao.
Here's the story. You want me to actually read it?
Oh, yeah. Give us the actual one.
So this is, I'm reading now. This is a tweet. I think I saw Michael Cali tweet it earlier today. So Falcao's talking about Jimenez. He says, for example, he made his Uruguay debut in place of Godin in a 2-0 World Cup qualifying win over Colombia and rattled Radamel Falcao then at his peak. I couldn't concentrate as Jimenez was driving me crazy, the forward later recalled. He asked me questions. First, he asked me what car I had. When I was explaining it, he had already gone and was waiting to meet across. That was only the start. Then he asked me why the flags of Ecuador, Colombia, and Venezuela have the same colors. Next, he came over to me and told me it was his debut, that he was very happy, and that he would get a tattoo of the date of this match, asking me if September was spelled with or without a P. I ended up missing the chance to jump for a cross. He drove me crazy.
Falcao is a bit of a dum-dum in this whole scenario.
Seriously, like,
come on.
No one's forcing you to answer all of these questions in depth. Like,
we just
ignore the guy.
Hey. Maybe this solves the greatest mystery of all time. Maybe we've solved it.
Go on.
This is the greatest football mystery. What did Materazzi say to Zidane? I know what it is now. Dude, if you're late filing your tax returns, does that incur a penalty because you headbutted me?
Let's see. And then Sunday, 3 o'clock, Qatar and Argentina. I think we have a lot to discuss with what has happened with Argentina so far. Is there any sort of simple explanation for how a team with seemingly so much talent could be underachieving this much?
Well, people are going after the manager, but there's been a string of bad managers. So I read this piece this morning by Jonathan Wilson, and I think this is pretty much on point. It would be absurd to blame the caretaker coach, Scaloni, the latest patsy to be shoved into the spotlight. What manner of shambles is it that has allowed a country that in the past year has produced the managers of both Copa Libertadores finalists and one of the Champions League finalists, the manager of the previous season's Europa League and Copa Sudamerica winners, and five managers at last summer's World Cup to go into this tournament with someone who had never taken charge of a competitive fixture? Scaloni may develop, but at the moment he is probably only the third best Argentinian coach at this Copa America. What a brilliant point. Now, you could argue they had an excellent coach, a groundbreaking coach, at last summer's World Cup, and it didn't make a difference. Mm-hmm. Not a difference did it make. Jonathan Wilson finishes with the most salient point. Wilson points out that the diminishing pool of high-class players is Argentina's biggest problem. And I know what you're going to say. Yeah, but JJ, Lo Celso, unproven. But JJ, Dybala.
First of all, they're not playing
him. Yeah, right. They're not even
yet.
Playing him. It is too Messi-centred. There is, as Dybala pointed out, this huge sense that get ball, get to Messi. That is not a plan. Andrew, I watched... what did I watch? I watched the Colombia-Argentina game and it was so shapeless. From beginning to end. There was no patterns of play. I couldn't tell what they were trying to do. And Messi often took it on his own shoulders to drop deep and try and beat four or five players and was invariably hacked down by Colombian players.
Well, there have been some unbelievable still shots taken of Messi basically collecting the ball around midfield, 6 to 7 defenders sort of collapsing around him, and really no Argentinian players to be found. It has been kind of Messi versus 11.
But right, it's not like I can say, well, Tagliafico was bombing forward, they were playing with. They're not doing that. It was just really kind of off-the-cuff, shapeless stuff that more often than not was easily broken up by Colombia.
Their only goal in this tournament came on a penalty, on a play where it was a handball in the box that VAR ruled, where really nobody, after it had initially happened, nobody was even really appealing
for it.
So they're fortunate to even be in the position they were in with just 1 point heading into this final match
against Qatar. This tournament is crazy already and has got very interesting. Now, the standard of play has not been that good, and I will fight on this hill. It's passionate, it's South American, but it is, it's been lacking in quality. But I will say this, it's about to get very interesting. Qatar were very good in their opener against Paraguay, and it is not a foregone conclusion that Argentina will roll them open and roll on into the next round. Yeah. Not by any stretch.
It's just weird for Argentina because, like you say, people want to blame the manager, but this is not new. They barely qualified for the World Cup. Messi saved them in that final game. What was it, against Ecuador? I'm trying to remember.
His hat-trick.
When they went down a goal early on, he brought them back to get into the World Cup. Then in the World Cup itself, the struggles to get out of the group. Now we're seeing it again in Copa America. You can put it down, if you want to the manager. I know people were mad about bringing Di Maria on for Lautaro Martinez and the shape changing and Aguero kind of being brought out of the game at that point when things seemed like they were clicking with those three. But this is an ongoing theme with them.
I was reading Tim Vickery on Brazil today, and he was talking about Chiche's struggles, but they're nothing compared to Argentina. Nothing. Oh, they have at least the manager has a concept of how he wants to play. Scaloni is just, he's not waving, he's drowning.
Let's see, Women's World Cup. The knockout stages begin this weekend. I guess the marquee games to look out for, England and Cameroon. That's on Sunday at 11:30 a.m. And then following that one at 3 o'clock is France and Brazil. And then the big one, obviously, for us here in the United States, or CONCACAF, really, Spain and the U.S. are at noon. That's the early game on Monday. And then Canada follows that one as they face Sweden in the later game. So for CONCACAF fans out there, both the U.S. and Canada playing on Monday. JJ, the Gold Cup. Friday, 7 o'clock, El Salvador and Jamaica. I do want to say that I think Jamaica deserves some props for how they've played of late. Their 3-2 win to start out in this tournament on the heels of a really good performance. Granted, it was a friendly, but still a really good performance against the U.S. In the build-up to this tournament. So maybe a little bit of credit is due Jamaica's way. They've been in the final of, the last two Gold Cups, so they quietly have been a thorn in some of the quote-unquote bigger nations' side in this tournament.
And we conveniently forget that they beat us in 2015 in the semifinal.
I don't forget about that. I remember exactly where I was watching that. I was at a bar in Chicago, and I remember it was probably one of the first times when I felt the true wrath of U.S. soccer Twitter. Because after the game, I was seething. Right. I couldn't believe what I had just seen. I was mad about everything. I thought the Guzan toss from out of the box was a
weird,
horrible call
yeah.
that you see happen in every game.
Yeah.
I was so angry about it. So I went on Twitter and said, let's all just calm down. And people, no, we refuse to calm down. Klinsmann should be fired immediately. Now, in hindsight, they might have been right.
Was that the night
I defended him that
night.
Was
that the night you were hung from the lamppost and you were just there for, you were just hanging by your shirt neck?
I defended Klinsmann all night on Twitter to an angry mob. But yeah, props to Jamaica. They face El Salvador. Saturday, 8 o'clock, the United States. And Trinidad and Tobago, our familiar foe. The wound has not healed. I still am not even ready to see us on the same field as them. It will just, the memories will come flooding back, JJ.
Well, not all the memories, because they'll probably play their A team in this game.
Don't do this. Don't. This brings us now to our 5 stars for 5 years. Memory of the week, JJ. This one is submitted from, JS from R. Washington. This person, I don't know if man or woman, they write, the post-TNT loss pod was fantastic. Being sad with you guys beat being sad alone. The best, though, was Andrew's I'm making a list. That really started the healing. Keep up the great work.
Those who have wronged us, I believe.
Those who have wronged us in the wake of the defeat. So we did a podcast the night of, and then the dust settled a little bit, and we did a podcast again a few days later. And in that one, I had time to kind of compose myself, but begin to identify enemies from what had happened. And so at the end of the podcast, I basically listed them. I went off. And for those who don't remember, for those who didn't hear it, this is what it sounded like, the list from after our loss to Trinidad.
Here's your 5 stars for 5 years memory of the week on Caught Offside.
My red card goes to Jack Warner. Bear with me for a sec. You remember him, right? The old CONCACAF chief who was the main target of the U.S. Department of Justice's crackdown on corruption in the sport. And I'm sure you also remember that he is from Trinidad and Tobago. Here were some of his comments in the wake of the United States' loss to his home nation. Ready? Quote, I have not been in better spirits. This is the happiest day of my life, Warner said. It, the win, couldn't have given me greater joy. Okay, he seems maybe a little hyperbolic, but it's a big moment for this country. I get it. He continues. They have used their government to help dismember FIFA in a way that is unimaginable. And last night on the field of play in Trinidad and Tobago, they were reduced to their knees. And for me personally, it has reduced the United States to a laughingstock. Last September 27th, when the judge ruled against Jack Warner, he's talking about himself, there was a party in the U.S. They were quite happy. Knowing that this happened, I wanted to go out and party as they partied last September when a judge ruled against me. I wanted to party. This is my personal feeling. They will continue to undermine the World Cup in Qatar 2022, but they will not succeed. As far as I'm concerned, this is the beginning of the end for U.S. football. Nobody in CONCACAF likes the U.S. I'm about to sound bitter here, but I think in these circumstances I'm allowed to. So Jack Warner hates the United States because they stopped him from being able to continuously break the law. Wire fraud, racketeering, money laundering. This is one of the telltale signs of bad guy. It's always someone else's fault. Don't blame me. It's the U.S.'s fault. It's their fault. We're just supposed to let it happen. This guy's unbelievable. Never look in the mirror. And how about the time he diverted funds meant for victims of the 2010 Haiti earthquake to himself? To himself. But yeah, hate the USA. Hate us also for the perception that we're trying to undermine the 2022 World Cup in Qatar. Or maybe we're trying to do that because of the human rights violations that are going on there. Over 2,000 people that have died in the buildings of those stadiums. JJ, I'm making a list. I am making a list. You've read The Count of Monte Cristo, right?
Mm-hmm.
You're familiar. Edmond Dantès, he's framed for treason, sentenced to serve life in the Chateau d'If, and he creates his list while he's there of who has wronged him and how he will seek revenge. That is us today. I am Edmond Dantès. We are in soccer's Chateau d'If. And while everyone is over in Russia having their party, having fun next summer, we will be making our list of those that have wronged us in this time. Jack Warner is on the list.
Who else is on the
Mexico
list? Mexico. Oh, God.
Is on the list after we saved their in 2014, but they couldn't do to help us this time around. Walter Lopez on the list. The official for the Panama-Costa Rica game for allowing the phantom goal.
Word.
He's on the list. He is on the list. By all means, if you are somebody out there who would like to add to the list, please post it as an iTunes review for us, and we will add them to the list, and we will monitor them, and we will remember quietly. We will lurk in the background. We'll rebuild, but we will never forget.
That is chilling.
Yeah.
Really chilling from you. And I know you're a guy who, you don't so much bear a grudge as nurture it.
I will not
send
forget.
It to school, put it through college, get it a job in a top organization. You're pretty much the father of the grudge.
This has been your 5 stars for 5 years memory of the week.
We will not forget. We have not forgotten.
The angriest I've seen you.
Those days and weeks in the aftermath of that game, I was a different person. Honestly, I was saying we were doing interviews with Jeff Carlisle like months after it happened, and I would tell him that the experience had changed me. Like my chemistry, my physical makeup was altered from the shock and disappointment of
I'll
that.
I'll never forget that night. So we recorded that night, and the next morning I did a piece from a rooftop with Aaron West for Copa 90, and I'm just tired and drawn. I had to go over everything me and you had spoken about again, and it did not get easier. It was awful.
Those days were unbelievable. By the way, as a follow-up to the list, I have an article in front of me from just last week, as a matter of fact. Let's see. I'm reading now. Former FIFA official Jack Warner could finally be extradited to the United States to face corruption charges after he lost an appeal in his native Trinidad and Tobago. Three appeals court judges dismissed Warner's judicial review against extradition to the U.S., but the court has stayed the ruling for 21 days pending an application by Warner for permission.
So we're
going to
see him in
case.
Brooklyn then. That's where they were all tried.
I want to know when the plane.
Oh.
When is the plane landing? Can we be there?
You know who. The best
holding
follow,
signs.
The best follow, the best book about this, Ken Bensinger, who we've had on the show. Remember we had him on the time when Chuck Blazer died?
Right.
Bensinger was on. That's your man. Follow his Twitter feed. You'll be there with a sign.
I love Jack Warner, just listening back to that. They threw a party when Jack Warner... Were you at that party, JJ? I don't remember attending any party when Jack Warner got arrested. Like, get over yourself, you egomaniac fool.
Speaking of arrested, Platini was also arrested this week, and we didn't really talk
about
that.
We forgot to mention that the other day.
But I'm sure it's kind of...
Well, they're going to have a hard time, I think, putting him away for this.
I think so,
because it all dates back to this famous dinner that he had where... The rumor is that was the night where he was bribed into, because he met with the president, the prime minister of Qatar, the prime minister of France at the time, Nicolas Sarkozy. And the rumor is that at that dinner, I guess, is when the bribe happened and
when he was
Platini changed from a U.S. vote to a Qatar vote. But how can anyone truly prove? He's saying that I was a Qatar vote before that dinner ever happened. It's going to be hard to prove, I guess, unless people see emails that suggest otherwise. I don't know.
There's a whole thing involving his son and a shirt sponsor that was a Qatari company. So there's a little bit of intrigue there as well, perhaps.
Yeah.
I don't know. I'm not sure what's going to happen with that.
Yeah. At any rate, we continue.
Red card.
Would you like to go first?
Yeah. Sky Sports have dreamt up the worst summer nightmare. It's as if they've gotten into my psyche and they've decided to make the worst show directly aimed at me.
What a huge summer we've got ahead on Sky Sports News, all starting on July the 1st.
Yeah, the football season might be over, but things are about to heat up once again with two brand new transfer shows.
Oh, Jesus.
You won't miss a thing with every deal and every talking point. It's all covered by our dedicated transfer blog.
Don't cover it.
This summer's transfers are going to be huge.
They won't.
We want to hear from you. It is going to be a huge summer.
This is your show, so please get in touch throughout the summer.
We'll be bringing you all the latest transfer news from football's biggest names right up until the deadline on August the 8th.
Doesn't matter where you are in the world, we bring it to you on every social media platform.
It's going to be a massive summer on Sky Sports News. Make sure you join the debate on Transfer Talk.
No!
No, God! No, God, please, no! 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 No!
Oh, the worst line. And we want to hear from ye. No, you don't! Some dullard in his bedroom who's been dreaming up transfer. Oh, God, it's just the worst, the most tedious stuff ever.
So there's a reason that we don't get into very much of this on this podcast. Because you're right, it's super tedious. And so much of it is utter nonsense and untruths that are being leaked by agents to serve a greater purpose in their mind. However, to defend Sky Sports for just a second.
They need the content.
There's that. And whether you and I feel this way or not, like, we've taken one stance on this that maybe there may be a lot of our listeners out there that disagree with us taking that stance, because I do believe that there is an appetite from people about transfer rumors. We see it in this country.
Yeah.
You know, the NFL offseason, the NBA offseason. In the minds of some people, they become just as interesting as the actual games.
I totally agree with you. And there's people I know that listen to this podcast who only care about who's coming in, who's coming out of their club. They don't watch that many games. They really don't. And it's more of an arms race. That's how they see it. I can't. I really, it's awful. It's total, total bull.
Now, the other problem for Sky Sports with this, like I mentioned the NBA and NFL, there is a slight difference. Let's be honest about most soccer fans. Like, the guy, a lot of transfers that turn out to be, like, significant transfers. Like, how many Premier League fans knew anything about N'Golo Kante before they saw him run on the field at Leicester City?
Absolutely.
So it's harder to get really excited about some of the transfers in the Premier League, because deep down inside Premier League fans, you can lie to us, you can lie to your buddies, but you don't know who these guys are. If you're talking about moves in the NBA or NFL, we all know every single
one
of the players.
But everybody has
talking
access to transfer market, and so they see assists, and they see goals, right, and they see stats, yeah, and all this, and they're like, he'd be brilliant. And they imagine the worst is the Liverpool fans who draw up teams with Fekir in it. I'm just like, oh my God, are you kidding me? Like, someone asked me, would you like Fekir to come to the club? I mean, he's a good player, yeah, and then I tried to think where it fit him in, and it's just tedious nonsense when it didn't happen. The one good thing about the transfer window is that things like this can happen.
Odin Wingy is spotted outside Loftus Road, giving out autographs and interviews.
Well, it's not 100%, it's not sorted yet, but I hope West Brom will be happy with what they will get.
After being parked up for 4 hours, he was told the deal was off.
Oh, no. It's so embarrassing.
If stuff like that happens, I'm all for it. Peter Odemwingie driving from West Brom to QPR to force in a deal.
And then having to go back.
And Sky Sports saying he's outside the ground. So all the QPR fans round his car, there for 4 hours. No one even came out to him, I don't think. And he had to drive back.
And like face his team again.
Awesome. Absolutely brilliant. But apart from that...
Well, I look forward to that show. I'm setting my DVR as we speak. Let's see, JJ. My red card is the Mexico fan chant. Now, we all know the chant. We've talked about it before on this podcast. You and I feel the way we feel. There isn't a whole lot else to be said. But that's not even really what my red card is. It's for CONCACAF's response. Now, I'm reading from Henry Bushnell's article on Yahoo. He says this. Bear with me, because this is lengthy, but I think it's interesting. He writes this. Yahoo Sports asked North and Central American Soccer Confederation simply, does CONCACAF have a position on whether the chant is homophobic? CONCACAF responded with four paragraphs, not one of which directly answered the question. Quote, our priority is to ensure that every spectator at the CONCACAF Gold Cup experiences an inclusive and enjoyable environment. Therefore, We will address any fan behavior that causes offense or that affects the integrity of the game. One of the most positive aspects about the CONCACAF Gold Cup is that it brings together such a variety of cultures. But this diversity can also lead to sensitive situations when the fan behavior of one nation is offensive to fans from other communities. Education is therefore essential to help stimulate a more harmonious and inclusive environment. That is why we have been working on the Let's Live in a State of Goal Inclusivity Initiative with all of the federations and stakeholders across our region. In 2019, this campaign is being allocated significant amounts of time and space across all promotional assets around Gold Cup venues, from LED signage and PA announcements to big screens. This will help us encourage fans to consider the impact their behavior will have on others. In other words, no, CONCACAF is unwilling to even confirm publicly that the chant is homophobic. Weak, weak, weak. Boy, you talk about being careful with your words so as not to offend anyone. I'm sorry. This situation is like the exact moment where it's okay to use strong language and impress upon people the basic point that we are for unity and we do not want this behavior at our matches. Like, I get the sentiment that they're trying to get across, but it's just so... it's so soft to
me.
It's
like,
just come right out and say it.
We might offend the people who are saying the homophobic chant. Like, it's ridiculous to me.
Yeah. So there is that. I'll never get it. I will not ever be able to wrap my mind around, like, the need to shout that when the goalkeeper kicks off. Like, and here's the one element that I almost feel sorry for CONCACAF in is because at this point, it's so deeply rooted in Mexican fans' behavior that, like, there's no getting it out now. They don't care about the Mexican Federation being fined. The fans don't care about that. The players came out last season and made the videos, those promotional videos, basically urging their fans to stop doing it. That hasn't mattered. It's like they're under some spell where we have to do this. Like, I don't know. I don't know. I just don't get it. I don't get it. It's very odd to me.
Caught Offside's Man of the Match.
What do you have?
Before I do this, can I just clarify something I said earlier when we were talking about Platini? The year after the World Cup vote, and this is from the Telegraph, the state-owned Qatar Sports Investments bought Paris Saint-Germain. Platini's son, Laurent, became the chief executive of Birda, a Qatar-owned sports company. Platini has always said that his son's role was unconnected to this vote.
There's a lot. You're right. But what is it? It's circumstantial evidence.
It doesn't count.
There's a lot of circumstantial evidence. Will that be enough? We don't know.
My man of the match. Blizzard magazine reminded me of this, so I went to the archives. 43 years ago today, Uli Hoeneß missed his spot kick for West Germany, leaving Antonín Panenka to step up for the penalty to win. Not a middle penalty. To win the whole thing. In Euro 76. So I went and I got the Czech commentary.
Wow.
And it's worth it, even in Czech.
Braně Majer. Panenka. Goal! Goal! Jsme majstři Evropy na rok 76.
Panenka! Panenka!
It's such a more graceful call than your call.
I firmly disagree.
Imagine having the stones, or as our friend Troy Deeney would say, the cojones to do that.
Oh, unbelievable.
And if you watch it and you'll notice in the commentary, the commentator is just, he's too overtaken by the moment. He whispers Panenka. And there's a gap between when Panenka strikes the ball, because the ball is obviously hit in an unusual fashion. It floats into the net. It's as if he can't believe what he's seeing. Unbelievable.
Yeah. It is a good call, but I believe this is far more graceful.
Panenka!
Let's see. My man of the match, JJ, goes to the U.S. Open Cup Minnows. On Wednesday night, New Mexico United FC defeated FC Dallas 2-1, coming from a goal down in the second half. Here is what the winner sounded like.
Flipped in, back post, Justin Schmidt was there. Now it's Moore on the first time, still loose in front. Frater, still loose, Hamilton, and it's in for New Mexico! Sam Hamilton on the doorstep, and puts New Mexico United on the doorstep of a date with the Loons of Minnesota United in the quarterfinals.
And then in the other match, the table's really turning here. St. Louis FC defeated FC Cincinnati, who used to be accustomed to playing the role of minnow spoiler. 1-0, the goal coming deep in stoppage time. Here was that winner.
As Hilton can now take the corner. Delivery here with pace. Finn!
And it was St.
How
Louis.
Awesome is that? That's their second MLS scalp in a row.
Yeah, they beat Chicago last week. They'll play Atlanta next in the quarterfinals. Sam Fink, who scored the winner, he's from St. Louis. It's his second go-around with the club. Good for him. Two of the final eight in the U.S. Open Cup will be lower-level teams. Very cool. Unfortunately, though, neither will be playing at home in the next round, which is one of the fun sights. We remember that FC Cincinnati match when they packed that place.
Yeah. It's a shame.
So they'll both be on the road, but hey, you never know.
The St. Luligans are a serious crew.
Yeah.
They love it. Zeke, who follows it, Zeke Ouellette. So when I tweeted, what a cup run this has been by St. Louis FC, another one bites the dust. He replies with hashtag MLS for the Lou. I'm like, you don't need MLS.
Oh.
You're beating them. You don't, this is not a, think of this. You are, what you've grown, what you are right now is just awesome in and of its own right. Celebrate that.
This take of yours is one that I'll just never really be able to agree with. I think it's out of touch with reality, honestly.
Your hatred of lower league soccer in
that
America
is
way worse.
That is, I'm sorry, were you asleep for the last 3 minutes when I just gave my man of the match to two lower level teams beating MLS teams?
It's only because you, when we had the production meeting.
Well, really? When
our
was that?
Our secretary, Janine, said, guys, you need to talk about lower league football. And she goes, I know, JJ, you love to do it, but Andrew, the perception of this podcast, you should talk about it. And Janine pushed the script in front of you. That's what happened. That's how I remember it.
Janine was very rude to me. I didn't care for it. You're wrong.
No, I'm joking.
No, not about how I feel about lower level teams. About your insistence
Zeke's
on them.
Zeke's
on
reaction.
Your inability to understand why fans of those teams would want to be consistently playing in America's top league.
I want them to have the journey of promotion to get there.
But that doesn't exist.
So make it happen. There's no reason.
Okay, let's just, there we go. Oh, okay. Now let's do it. It doesn't exist. And it's not going to exist for the foreseeable future.
It's not going to exist with that attitude. Imagine, think of the great.
So you're right. Let's
think
speak it into existence.
No,
come on, come on, quiet.
Let's this is the country.
Promotion relegation.
Sorry.
Promotion relegation.
Andrew, stop it.
Promotion relegation.
This is the country that makes things happen. We will things into existence. That is how this very country started out. Imagine you, though, in the great moments of history. Imagine Washington on that freezing December night crossing the Delaware. Is everybody ready to go? Yeah. Theodore, you're good. Yeah. Jacob, you're good.
Theodore?
I put it in there. I don't know. I was thinking. Andrew, are you ready? I'm not feeling it tonight, guys, so we're not going to try. Oh, I imagine you.
No
the,
one's saying don't
the moon
try.
Landings. The moon landings. Andrew, are you ready to be launched into space for this epic moment? I have a conflict tonight, guys. I can't make it.
Are you insane? No one is saying don't try. It would be amazing if it were to happen. But right now,
your attitude is the problem.
My attitude is not the problem.
And the attitude
monster.
Of other people that don't want to try. Don't want to do
it. I'm not saying don't try, don't do it. I'm telling you that I completely understand and commiserate with fans of these teams that want their clubs to be at the top level.
His
and right now,
Zeke's
there's
reaction.
No promotion relegation. Their only way in is to try to just kind of like convince people that they should be in.
And pay a load of money.
Yeah.
Into this thing.
That look. I want to grab you. I want to grab you and I want to put you up against the wall and I want to shake you because you're not understanding what I'm saying. I'm not for the current system, but this is the current system. These people have no other way to get their clubs into MLS. God in heaven.
Imagine you writing JFK's speech.
You've lost your mind.
I look at things and ask, I can't be bothered. That would have been it.
You've actually lost your mind. It's sad. Because you're a bright person.
I don't look at things and say, why not? I look at things and I can't be bothered.
What a show this was. We will be back, of course, next week in the aftermath of the U.S. women on Monday.
Will we? Why should we even bother?
I don't understand.
We shouldn't bother. You know, it's...
So
I mean,
JJ has now made his feelings clear about this tournament.
No,
I'll be here.
I'll do the podcast on my own.
So what are we going to do? We're going to do two separate competing U.S. women recap podcasts?
Yep, because your attitude stinks.
I don't think... like it's like you've lost brain cells. Like the ability to compute thoughts.
I'm tired. It's been a long week.
Well, hey, this was fun. We will be back, like I said, next week. Keep your five stars, five years reviews coming. Those
please
are great.
Do. Get on iTunes, review it.
And subscribe to the Caught Offside feed. We have our own podcast channel, and you never know when exclusive content will appear on there. So make sure you subscribe to that channel.
Also, one more thing to spread the word, because, you know, those above us care not to bother. Retweet on @CUSSoccerPod. You see our tweet with the link go up. Hit it a retweet. You never know whose feed it'll pop up in, and they become a new acolyte, a new member of the cult of Offside.
That's a great point. Hey, to you I say...
take you later, fun boy.
See ya.
Yeah, I can't be bothered.
You've been listening to the Caught Offside Soccer Podcast.